Well, today you are going to meet Jay and Elizabeth Tipton, who have added kids to their family three different ways, including, of course, embryo adoption. That's why they're on the Embryo Adoption Podcast. But, you know, at a deeper level, they will tell you it's God who's knit their family together. It is a story about variety and a story about God's provision. So we're looking forward to introducing you to them today. I'm Mark Mellinger. This is the Embryo Adoption Podcast, brought to you by the National Embryo Donation Center. You can find out more about us and our work at embryodonation.org. It's been so much fun getting to know you guys through the National Embryo Donation Center. You're fellow Hoosiers, which means I like you already, despite the fact that those of you who are watching on video can see Jay is wearing a Purdue hat and I'm an IU grad. I like you anyway. It's okay. We can still be friends.
Yeah, we can be Big Ten brothers.
You got it. When you got married, let's start here. How did you envision your family taking shape? We'll get into actually how it did take shape, but what were you thinking when you started out?
Well, when we started out, we had spoken about, you know, we had had that conversation even before we were married, just as we were courting, dating, you know, getting to know each other. And we both knew that we wanted to have kids. We both came from what now is considered larger families. We're both the oldest of four children. So, you know, larger families for, you know, today's standards. And so we thought, yeah, we'd both like to do that. And we believed very strongly in adoption from a...
It was always part of the plan.
Yeah. And from a number of different standpoints, you know, looking at the way that scripture uses adoption, and Paul talks about how we're adopted as sons of God. And we believe that that was something that we wanted to, I guess, glorify God in and exemplify in our family, was just adopting and having children from different means, different backgrounds. And so that was always on our agenda. What we kind of figured was that I was trying to find a career, I guess. At the time, I was working this and that job, and didn't have a career trajectory. And so a couple years into marriage, I decided that I wanted to go to school and become a nurse. And so we figured we'll have kids, you know, hopefully a couple of kids while I'm in nursing school. And then
wait to do adoption once we've got the job and the finances all completely lined up perfectly, because I like things lined up perfectly.
me too. By the way, I'm still looking for a career. So if you found a good one, you know, let me know. No, go ahead. Keep going.
I'm enjoying nursing. 10 out of 10 would recommend.
I definitely don't have the comportment for that. No, yeah. that one won't work. So I guess I'll stick with what I'm doing now. But yeah, well, go ahead.
So that was our plan. And then partway through nursing school, we had Abigail, and we had a difficult miscarriage, I guess would be the best way to say it. Elizabeth experienced an ectopic pregnancy. Baby had lodged in the fallopian tube, and we were unaware of that, and it had ruptured. And she was about 12 or 15 weeks along. And so 11 weeks, excuse me. So she, you know, obviously there was that, you know, surgery, so forth. And after that, we learned through some other testing that the tube that had ruptured was gone, and the other fallopian tube was not patent. So
it doesn't work.
The doctors told us at that point that our chances of having biological children were pretty much nil. So
let me stop you there. I mean, what's going through both of your minds when you hear that? You'd already had, as you mentioned, your oldest, Abigail, biologically, but now you find out, okay, it looks like chances are very, very slim that we could have biological children again. I would imagine that you would need some time to process that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very difficult, just emotionally. I mean, physically, definitely, because it was an emergency situation, but definitely emotionally, because we had planned to have a big family, and feeling like God had basically said, well, that's not going to happen with a lot, like, between you two. It's going to have to include a ton of other people now. It was really rough. And I was having a really hard time processing it all. But God had dropped us the week before we had Abigail into a church, and we didn't realize that it was a very adoption-centric church. And we dropped into we were randomly selected into a small group, which just so happened to have two adoptive families in it.
Yeah.
And they just were huge resources for us through all of that situation. Yeah. It was really amazing to watch God just put us in the exact situations we needed to be in, even though we didn't know we needed that situation yet.
And I mentioned that at the outset, your story is really a story of variety and a story of God's variety and God's provision. So, mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned adoption had been part of the plan before you got mm-hmm. married. You just didn't think you would come upon it so early. It was a bit of a
surprise. We wanted to have all our finances in order before we tried to spend a lot of money.
Yeah,
yeah, right. I totally understand that. I mean, that's very much the right idea. God puts you in this church, though, and I remember when you were here at the NEDC, you spoke with me about how much this church has meant to you, how adoption-minded they were. Unpack that a little bit. You know, what does an adoption-minded church look like, and how did this body of believers specifically help the two of you?
Well, when we... So, I mean, family is an important thing for us, not just from the standpoint of, you know, Vin Diesel, you know, all you got is family kind of thing. But no, like it's a spiritual thing for us. You know, it really is. And so when we were looking for a church when Elizabeth was pregnant with Abigail, and we had been looking for a little while because we wanted to find a place where families were there together. We felt like a lot of churches now, if you try to walk into the service with your children, someone's, you know, oh, well, we've got a spot for those children.
The kids. Yeah, they go over there.
Yeah. And we both felt like we wanted our children to be with us, worshiping with us and listening and being taught from scripture with us so that we can model that for them. You know, what does that look like?
And that the other people would feel that kids were contributing to congregational worship, like yeah. that they wanted them to be there, not just they're an annoyance.
Yeah. But then, you know, the other, I don't know, I guess as far as from a congregational standpoint, to be adoption minded, they were just there, you know, it wasn't something that they were making their whole identity, but it was just a part of their family. You know, it wasn't, you know, I'm an adoptive parent. I'm a parent, you know.
You could tell because it was a conspicuous adoption situation. Yeah. It was obvious that maybe that family doesn't match.
Yeah.
But there was at least two, maybe three families that were definitely conspicuously adoptive. And then there were other families that just had adopted children, but that was just how life is. Like, it wasn't made a big deal of, but it was, oh, if you have questions about it, ask anything. If you're actually pursuing adoption, we would be very supportive, answer any questions, point you in directions of resources or the stack of stuff I have archived away that I will then distribute to your house. It was very good. And the church was very connected with a pregnancy resource center. And just there was events that were happening there. And it was talked about and people were giving resources to it and using the needed resources that were there. And just it was part of stuff that was happening in the church. So you could tell it was not going to be a foreign situation where people are going, oh, I don't know, or always pointing it out, or mm-hmm. it was just normal how it was.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, it kind of, it stems out of that value and that emphasis placed on children and having children in the church and having children be part of the church. You know, if you value children, you know, being brought up in scripture, then it will flow forth from that almost automatically that you're going to want to have children in your family. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to want to have children. And if that means that, and the, it's really cool because there's a variety even in the families at our church. One of the families, they have four children of biologically, and then they adopted two. And another family has also a couple of biological children and two adopted. And then one family, both of their children are adopted. And so it's there's variety even in that, but it's an attitude that says we want to see children brought up in the word and
there were some
hearing God. And so, yeah,
rotating through the church because they're not always there to stay. Foster children, foster families that had foster children, yeah, and they were there sometimes and sometimes they weren't. Because that's how the foster care system works.
That's right. That is how it works. So you have this resource, these numerous resources actually to draw on, and you know that's the road you're going to go down. So tell me how, before we get to your embryo adoption, tell me how God brought Liam to your family.
Well, so
we
lost the one baby in June.
July,
excuse me. And it took several months to kind of recover emotionally from that and figure out, okay, what do we do now? Moving forward now, how do we continue with our family?
But since adoption had always been on the plan, on the table, we knew even if we weren't fully emotionally there, it takes a little while and you've got to save all the finances. So that September, we actually said, okay, here's our bank account. We're starting with this $500. This is labeled adoption fund. Here we go. And as God provides, we'll take steps because honestly, that's not looking good financially if we want to be in school, running an in-home daycare, trying to make sure everything works and putting money aside. Maybe that won't work.
So what we decided was that we would, the application fee to the agency that we had been directed to by a couple people at our church who had worked with them before was $500. And so we said, we have that. So this is going to be basically our seed and we're going to put it out there.
We saw our calendar of what fees were due when, and yeah, once we hit this mark, we can take step one.
Yeah. Yeah. So we basically decided we're going to have this account set aside and we're just going to put money in as it comes in, as we're able to. And once we've reached the amount where we can financially take this next step, we'll take the step. And so we really were just kind of letting God lead. And I vividly remember sitting at our kitchen table with the application printed in front of us and our check on top of it and just praying over it and saying, God, this is the path that you've set for us. And, yeah, and this is the direction that you evidently are taking our family. And so we're just going to walk forward with all the faith and all the patience that we can muster and
that's the hard
trust you for the rest, because our faith and patience is very, very little. So,
well, I was listening to the Ramsey podcast because we were trying to do all our financial stuff and they had somebody on and she'd written a book. It was called How to Adopt Without Debt. And I said, I must get this book. And I got the book and there was tons of suggestions in there. We sent an email out to our church family saying, we're planning to adopt. Help us by spring cleaning your houses. I'm going to have a garage sale. And we had people bringing us boxes and boxes and boxes of garage sale stuff. And we had 6 garage sales.
It worked.
Over about a 2.5 year period. Yes.
I made my daughter a crocheted stuffed animal. I posted a picture of her with it. I had people ask me if I could make them some, and I started a crochet stuffed animal business. And all of that went towards our adoption. People donated yarn so that I could make them for without putting money out for supplies. And God blessed that, and it went crazy. And I sold 348 critters. And we said, well, you can recycle aluminum cans. So people bring our cans to our house, and we had people dropping trash bags of soda cans on our porch. We had somebody say, I'm putting all new piping in my house. Come get all the copper pipe. I'll write you a letter so nobody thinks you're a thief.
Yeah.
And recycle that. And so we had just all these different ways that God was bringing funding into our family for this adoption. And it was rolling on out. And we did our home study. We talked to that lady, and she said, well, you guys are open to a lot of things, so be ready for at any time. And so I took that to mean it would be quick, but oof, 2.5 years.
You really worked for this. I mean, you worked for it and you waited for it. Mm-hmm. So it took 2.5 years until you got the call about Liam. And how much money did you, I mean, you don't have to tell me, I guess, if you don't want to, but I think if people are listening, you know, if you can give them a ballpark of about how much you had to raise.
We spent over $30,000 on the adoption stuff. And part of it, we got a grant through LifeSong for Orphans for part of it. It was a matching grant. Our friends and family were amazing. It was matched within 2 weeks. And money came from places.
Yeah.
And sometimes it didn't make sense on paper, but it was there in the bank account.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
It was like the story of, I think it was Elijah, goes to a widow's house and asks her to make him some bread. And she said, I have no oil. I have no flour. Okay, well, just make me a loaf. And so she makes him the loaf, and boom, jars are full. And that felt like what we were experiencing. Because we had friends call us, you know, some friends called us and said, hey, we just had a, it was, you know, we had a distant relative pass, and they left us a fair amount.
And we were trying to figure out what to do with it.
So we would like to give you some of it. And so
this is what we're going to do with it. And they gave it to us, and it was the exact amount we needed to pay the next fee. It got us there. And it was just, I wrote it all down in a scrapbook because I needed to be reminded sometimes when it was feeling like it was taking God a little too long to meet my calendar because he has a better calendar.
Yeah.
But just seeing how every single time we thought it wasn't going to happen, he would do something and there would be what we needed.
And the other side of it was almost harder emotionally. The financial side of it, we put in his hands and
he did it.
We really didn't even hardly have to think about it, because every time we were just kind of going through the process with the agency, and every time it came time to pay the next agency fee, the money was already there. It's not like we were saying, okay, well, let's wait. And once we have it, it was there already.
Yeah.
And so the harder part for us was the actual, waiting. Because obviously at that point you're just waiting for the phone call to say, hey, we've got someone who would like to maybe place their child with you. And so we had in about the year or so before we got the phone call for Liam, we had two different mothers who were expecting, and both had expressed a strong interest in placing with us. We had met them and talked to them, and in the 11th hour, our expectation was that they would place with us, and then in the 11th hour they chose to parent, which is fine. But
disappointing.
Disappointing when you've been looking forward to this. And so she sort of ghosted. She didn't really communicate with us or the agency or anybody, and we couldn't reach her. And so, or rather, they couldn't. We never had a direct contact to her. But
when we got the phone call about Liam, we didn't know. We thought it was them calling and saying, we're pretty much sure she's not gonna respond anymore. And so I was prepared for great disappointment, and I picked up my phone. She goes, oh, your husband's on the other line. And I said, oh, because he's under his truck fixing his brakes at my parents' house. And she called and said, so because we hadn't heard from the other birth mom you guys have been communicating with, we gave her a couple weeks warning, and we put your profile back out there, and a mom picked you guys. And we said, okay. And she goes, and the baby's here already. We said, oh, really?
Yeah.
So we got all the details. And
yeah, and from that phone call to the time that we met him, it was about 36 hours.
Yeah.
So wow. It all happened so fast. Both of the mothers that we had been speaking to before had been expecting girls. We already have a daughter, so we're thinking, okay, fine, that's cool. We don't need anything. And sure enough, it's a boy. So now, oh no, we need boys' clothes. And our church again just
went
out, and we came home, and there were 3 bags of baby boy clothes on our porch that someone had left for us, and
boxes of diapers.
Yep, boxes of diapers
and 2 dozen eggs because we need food, and I have chickens.
Yeah. Now that's God's hands and feet.
It's true. Absolutely. And not only that, it was, we went to the hospital. He was 3 days old, and we got to the hospital and we're checking it out. He's doing his car seat test, and they came in and said, so we just instated our COVID visitor policy. There's only one visitor per patient. We're pretending one of you doesn't exist. don't leave or you can't get back in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So there we were with our brand new baby.
Oh.
And the world shuts down. And still our church was there for us. People were leaving things on our porch. People were Zoom calling in. And there was an online meal train of gift cards galore.
Oh, great. It's a great story. And this was, like you said, early COVID. So this was almost 3 years ago, probably now.
Yep. March 2020. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was right when it was starting, because Liam's almost 3. So now let's talk about, again, for those of you who are watching on the video version, the beautiful little boy that you have in your hands there, who's been so good for our interview today. That is Nathaniel, and that is your NEDC baby, who at the time of this recording is only a few months old. He was born in September. We're recording this in January. You had biological, you had domestic adoption. How did embryo adoption in the NEDC come onto your radar in the first place?
Well, during our domestic adoption process, I was deep diving on all adoption video resources on YouTube. And I saw an article that said, woman gives birth to adopted child. And I said, well, that's a very strange title. I don't understand. Of course, every child is given birth. Okay, I'm clicking on it. So I was link baited into the situation where I can't remember the name of the couple, but they had triplets.
Yeah, you're the Aaron and Rachel Halbert.
There we go.
Yeah.
And it was just fascinating to me because a lot of people, pregnancy is very difficult. With my daughter, I had an easy pregnancy and I loved all of it, except the first couple weeks with the saltines and ginger ale. You know, other than that, it was great. but I read that and I said, well, this is definitely something that I want to put on the table as a possibility if it is, you know, medically possible, because old fashioned way is not going to work anymore without a little bit of science. So maybe that'll be something we can do, but I wasn't quite emotionally ready to be pregnant yet. So we continued with our domestic adoption. We'd already been doing the home study and we knew that was the path we were supposed to be taking. Well, now that that was over, my husband laughed. He goes, okay, our son is 6 months old. Put down the research. We're not ready to pursue that yet.
Yeah.
Calm down. We don't even have the money for it. Just relax. And I had all my spreadsheets going with like calendars and possibilities. I had my husband put on the brakes a little bit.
You were excited. He wasn't. He was excited, I'm sure. But hitting the brakes, pumping the brakes a little bit. Yeah. Finally, you get to a point where you say, okay, you know, things are stable enough. We're going to apply to the NEDC and let God direct this journey.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So I had a spreadsheet of NEDC versus the Nightlight Snowflake program. Sure. And I was going back and forth and looking at all the details, and we were praying and we were talking, and we just decided that the NEDC was the way we wanted to go. And he reached out to you to ask his couple questions that he wanted to make sure he was completely informed about the embryo adoption process before we jumped in and then had questions. So, yeah, we just started having things work out for that and had the conversations with a couple people at church about what we were going to pursue. And everybody was thinking that sounded science fiction-y.
Well, it does. Yeah. I mean, it does sound science fiction-y if you're just first learning about it. And then you realize it's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. But it is scientific. It's high tech. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And we knew that IVF was always a possibility, but not something we were really comfortable with because of the fact that a lot of places want to push you to create as many embryos as possible and pick all the ones that are just looking the most perfect and go from there. And we didn't want to end up with 25 embryos in a freezer somewhere and a ton of emotional baggage with that.
Yeah. And I actually had an experience when I was in nursing school where we were doing an off location or an off site thing for our class, and we're sitting there waiting for the event to start. And I was chatting with one of my classmates about it, and she and her husband were sitting there. And I was telling her about embryo adoption, and you know, we're thinking about maybe this might be the next step for us and our family. And she looked me in the eyes and said, "I have some." Because she and her husband had to do IVF. Mm-hmm. And she starts all but begging me, take them, please. No, please take them. If you guys want to have more kids, please take them. Because they're in a place somewhere in New Jersey, I think, somewhere East Coast. And she said, I think about it every day. Like, please take.
But I barely knew her. It was 6 a.m. He hadn't had his coffee yet.
It was something that we were just talking about. You know, I think we were still in the process with Liam at that point.
We hadn't had our court date yet because it was delayed for COVID. Yeah. They couldn't finish the finalization of his adoption. We got him in March, and then everything was waiting until his official adoption day in October.
So it wasn't the right time for us to even really have that conversation with her, but I was thinking, man, this is just wild that she feels that much of a burden. I understood it. It didn't not make sense to me. I completely understood it, but I just thought, man, I felt for her because I was like, man, I can't imagine carrying that, you know, everywhere you go, you're thinking about, you know, these children of yours that are waiting somewhere.
Yeah.
And so that really, by the time we got around to, okay, we're looking at the NEDC, we're looking at what their philosophy is and their treatment and handling of embryos and that sort of thing. It was,
that's what felt the best. Felt like what was matching our heart for kids.
Mm-hmm. How'd the process go? Describe the process a little bit with the NEDC. Not too much minutia, but because people generally know that. I mean, it's a lengthy process. You know, it's usually going to take you 8 to 9 months from application to the day that you're here for the transfer. But what was it like? Yep. Well, people are always, explain the whatever the joke is there, because as usual, it's lost on me. So we can cover that
it's a God perfect timing thing again.
Yeah, let's hear it. In my brain was, compared to pursuing a traditional, you know, domestic adoption, NEDC was speed dating. y'all sat us down for a day in your office, and we met everybody and got pretty much the entire process done.
5 hours though was a little long, and I was in need of a hamburger.
Well, we have trimmed that down since you guys have been through.
I saw that and I said, oh, that's probably good. Because I was sitting for half the ending of it going, I just need to go get a hamburger. I'm really hungry.
We've decided that it's in your best interest and our best interest that we make people suffer less. So that's our that's our theme for 2023.
Well,
again, embryo adoption, less suffering.
Again, though, compared to a 2.5 year process,
it was much faster.
It felt real speedy.
But we were looking at everything, trying to get all our paperwork in, and they had kind of mentioned how it probably wouldn't be very long between paperwork and initial appointment. And so I put in our paperwork in May, and I said, so I'll probably hear from them like for June or July or something. They said, we'll see you in September. And I started crying. And Jay goes, it's okay. We're talking it through. I'm crying. And in the hallway, as Jay's starting to pray about the fact that I needed to be putting it all in God's hands, Abigail's running down the hall, yells, singing, he's got the whole world in his hands. And I'm going, okay, I hear you. I didn't want to hear you, but I understand. And he really did understand, because it turns out, through listening to the podcast, you guys actually interviewed our donor couple, and their profile wasn't in there until 2 weeks before our initial appointment.
Is that amazing?
It is. That's and timing, so man. God timed it perfectly so that this little boy would end up in our family.
Wow. Yeah. He's a beautiful kid. Tell me about him, by the way, how that all came together.
Oh, it was great. So he so as we were going through the process, I don't know what the terminology down there with y'all is, but I guess selection or just
embryo selection, matching, whatever you want to call
matching.
It,
right? There we go. Matching. Yeah,
so, I like that one.
So we were looking through, and it's overwhelming. It really is. There's just so many names and faces and stats and this, that, and the other. And
you can look it up by eye color.
Well, and the other,
it's too much stuff.
And the other thing too was, from our standpoint, you know, this has never been, you know, this is how we want to build our family and how we want our family to look. It's always been, I mean, from the moment when we were praying over that, that application for Liam, it was, God, whoever you want to bring into our family and however you choose to build our family, we're here for it. And
we didn't check all the boxes that they needed to blend in with our family.
Yeah,
absolutely.
However our family is going to look is the way God intends it to look.
Yeah. And so I honestly was a little bit uncomfortable with choosing, you know, it.
Sure.
With Liam, it was, we put in the application and then God,
the birth mother chose,
you know. And with this, it felt a little bit less like that. And so I was honestly trying to figure out, how do I not have to make a choice? And so, because we already have a conspicuously adoptive family, we were able to.
Well, unfortunately, that gave us more choice.
Right.
And when you say conspicuously adoptive family, you mean like a different ethnicity?
Our son
looks nothing like either of us.
Yes. He is of African-American Hispanic descent.
So
it's a little obvious. People can look around the playground and go, who does this kid belong to? That's me. Hi, I'm with him.
So you were open to pretty much anything, and like you said, that actually widens the pool with the NAVC.
Right.
it doesn't narrow it, which felt a little
overwhelming.
What we ended up doing then was, we reached out to the gal who runs the
Kelly,
the registry there.
Yep.
And you're all, yes, Kelly, sorry. And
I only remember because it was spelled differently.
Yeah,
in the head.
Yeah. So Kelly E-Y at the end. Yes.
There we go. Like, it's Kelly with the extra letters.
Yeah.
So reached out to her and basically just said, look, here's the deal. We've got basically every option open to us. You know this registry better than anyone. Is there any profile that, for whatever reason, might not have as good a chance of being selected?
More difficult to place. Yeah. And can you send us back some info?
Yeah. And so prior to that, we had both gone through prayerfully and just kind of separately said, you know, this profile I'm feeling maybe led towards, this one speaks to me. And from that, we compared, and I think we both said that we would pick
seven that matched. Yeah. And we said, okay, both of us ended up looking at these seven. And so we'll just make our list of that seven. And Kelly came back, and the first one on both of our lists was the one she said.
Yeah.
And we said, all righty then. I guess that one is for us.
Yeah.
And you were choosing, to be clear, from our special consideration
embryos.
That's what we call the harder to place embryos.
we narrowed it down to the special consideration embryos and just started from that pool.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
what is the special consideration in Nathaniel's case? Do you know?
Yes, a hepatitis B positive marker.
Okay, so he was one of the Hep B embryos, which there's never been a case of an embryo in that category passing along the Hep B.
And I did not take 100% your word for it, but went to the medical resources of our family. My dad is a doctor, my mom's a nurse, brother's an anesthesiologist. And just kind of, hey guys, let's talk.
And what did they back us up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as you say,
trust but verify.
Yes. My brother did say, yeah, I don't know. I'm studying my own stuff right now. I have no knowledge of this. You might want to go ask somebody else. But I had another nurse friend who was like, oh yeah, I've heard that with friends going through IVF, and I've done research on that for them. That's not a thing that has resulted in Hep B for mom or baby that we can document.
That's correct. And those embryos, we have to place them in the special consideration category. So people should know, people who are interested in adopting embryos with the NEDC, if you're looking at special consideration, whatever that conjures in your mind, it's probably all the embryos in that category aren't whatever comes up in your mind. Some would have markers for Down syndrome, some autism, some the Hep B who have to be stored separately, but there's never been a case of the Hep B being passed along. So your case was a case of God really, really blessing the two of you, four of you really, with with a healthy little boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hi. You spitting? Look at you.
He is behaving so well in this interview. I can't believe what is his ethnicity, by the way? When I look at him, I can't tell.
He is Irish and Chinese.
Irish-Chinese combination. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. I do. I love how God is putting together your family. There is so much variety, and it's great to see.
But I will say, I was listening to all of your backlogs of the podcast. I was about 10 weeks pregnant. I said, oh, look, they interviewed our donor. I'm going to listen. Yay. And I was listening and getting ready for church. And the donor goes, yes, and all the embryos we donated, they're male. And I said,
and we didn't know if we were having a boy or girl yet at that point.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And we don't tell you. Look at gender
reveal.
Yeah, that, you know, that is, that's fascinating, because we actually work quite hard
into the other room. I said, Jay, I was not looking for this information, but I feel that I have to share it with you.
Yeah,
right. Because we do, that's our policy at the NEDC for the PGT, the embryos that have undergone the pre-implantation genetic testing. We don't, we'll reveal everything that's fundamental about the health of the embryos and everything else, but we don't reveal the sex. For us, we understand how people would want to know that. We don't judge you for that, but we don't, you know, for us it's too close to designer baby, so we don't. But I cannot believe that through the podcast you actually did some detective work unintentionally. That's hilarious.
Unintentionally, and it floored me. Especially because we purposefully hadn't done like the panoramic testing to get a really early one. So I still had 10 more weeks until our anatomical ultrasound. And suddenly I knew I was having a boy and potentially more boys in the future. And I was just really floored, and it took me a little while to process that.
Yeah.
Are you guys hanging on to the other embryos? Or you keep? Are you
we are. We intend to back for both of them. But it was just a surprise.
That is, that is so good. That's so good. Let's, I don't want to keep it too long. We, you know, this has been great. Let's, a couple last things I want to ask before we go. So when people look at the sheer variety of your family, like you said, multi-ethnic, special consideration, children from three different methods. What do you hope they see? What do you want them to see?
God paints with many colors.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I mean, we, you know.
At the heart of it, all humans are just the human race. And when you look at our family, you just get to see the tonal variety.
Well said. Well, very well said. I love it. I don't know if you've even had time to think about this because you have, you know, kids ages, what, like 6 to just a few months right now.
Just turned 7.
Oh, just turned 7. Okay. So, right. That would make sense. She's aged a little bit since you were here. We all have. How have you grown closer, though, to God through all this? How has he been shaping your soul? You have any occasion to think about that or still process?
I think just challenge.
Every time I feel that God has taught me already, I've learned the lesson of his timing is perfect. He laughs and says, you haven't learned it quite yet. I'm going to teach it to you one more time. I had to learn it waiting to get married. I had to learn it waiting for our first child because I had PCOS and it took a lot of tweaking to figure it out. And then again, waiting for our domestic adoption. And then again, because as soon as we had our initial appointment, they said, you're going to need a surgery for medical clearance. So pump the brakes just a little bit. And I said, I didn't want to pump the brakes. I've got my calendar fully organized. I like it to spread out just the way I had envisioned it. And God said, no, you're going to have to learn this one more time.
Right. He'll teach you over and over and over. And you learn it a little bit more each time.
Yeah. I think for me, two things that he's taught me that have been continuous lessons throughout my life, but the lessons always hit harder when you have a family that is involved in them. And so one of them is just opening my hands and letting go of whatever I think tomorrow is, whatever I think later today is, you know, whatever I think it looks like, it doesn't. You know, I went to work that one morning in July thinking, cool, yeah, we've got our second child. Everything's going to be good. And the next day I was, you know, Elizabeth was recovering from her emergency surgery and we didn't have our child anymore. Mm-hmm. And so just really allowing God to run things and to, you know, try and keep my own expectations within the confines of what he's got for me. I think has been one of the big ones. And the other one has been just all the times in Psalms where the psalmist talks about, you know, recounting the goodness of God. And the number of times in our marriage that we've sat down and just one of us will say, man, do you remember when this happened? Do you remember when that happened? Remember when we had like $20 in our bank account and we're trying to figure out how we're going to, you know, pay the bills pay our rent for the next week. And then all of a sudden you had someone to sell a cell phone to and that paid our rent. Like it seemed big at the time, but that's a small thing compared to, hey, remember when we wanted to adopt and we started with $500 and I'm in school full time and we're just really trying to keep the lights on. And 2.5 years later, we haven't had to actually worry for a single penny for our adoption. You know, if anybody's listening to this, someone needs to hear this. I don't know who, but think back on God's goodness. Make that a part of every day to say, God has provided for me in miraculous ways and in mundane ways. And
I just actually started in front of you. Setting an alarm on my phone. It goes off at 1 o'clock every day. And the kids already know before I can even get the question out, what are you thankful for today? They're already yelling things at me because they know the music that plays at 1 o'clock. Oh, this is the time we're supposed to say what we're thankful for.
I love it though.
And Liam was like, oh, French fries. I like French fries.
It's a great lesson though. I mean, recounting the goodness of God and taking time to be intentional about it.
Yeah.
That's great.
The more we can get into the habit of that, the more it almost becomes a reflex. You know, when I'm having a bad day, when something is going wrong, doesn't mean I don't get frustrated. Doesn't mean I don't get down or have a bad day. But the natural reflex now is to think about, God has been so good to me. You know, this too shall pass. The good times pass, the bad times pass. But if you remember the good times, then it's easy to imagine the bad times passing a little easier.
Yeah,
it is. And yeah, no matter really, I was reading a book the other day that put it quite well, you know, for the Christian, whatever life looks like on earth right now, this is the worst it gets. And, you know, eternity is the best it gets. It's the other way around, I guess, if you're not in Christ, which is sad and something to think about. But that's very hopeful to know for the Christian, the best is always yet to come. Well, I love it. This has been such a fun conversation with you guys and so much to mine there. So I'm excited to hear people hear this and respond between them and the Lord, however they think he is leading. And by the way, I'm just going to end this podcast in a very appropriate way, considering who I'm talking to. If you ever happen to find yourself in Fort Wayne, Indiana, do yourself a favor. Go downtown to the famous Coney Island hot dog restaurant. There is a connection of Jay's there who's pretty important. And you'll thank us later, okay? Let us know. Yeah, you know, shoot me an email or something if you go there, because it's a hidden gem. That's it for now. This has been the Embryo Adoption Podcast. If you want to find out more about the National Embryo Donation Center, just go to our website, embryodonation.org. You can click on the adoption section if you want to know more about embryo adoption specifically. Again, that's embryodonation.org. I'm Mark Mellinger. This has been the Embryo Adoption Podcast.